before we move ahead with RG, let me just mention briefly something that I believe I did not explain well last time. So let's just look again at our Landau-Ginzburg functional, the long wavelength Landau-Ginzburg functional. So it's integral d dx. So 1/2 grad phi squared plus r over 2 phi squared plus u over 4 factorial phi to the fourth. And so as I mentioned last time, you know, we could have written this down based only on symmetry considerations, right? So the fact that this involves only even powers of phi has to do with the sigma to minus sigma symmetry of the Ising model Hamiltonian. But so this term, right? So what I said last time, which is not quite right, well, it's not the whole truth anyway, that you know, so this term has the form of this gradient term has to do with the inversion symmetry of the lattice on which we define the Ising model. Well, if you look at this, this actually has a much higher symmetry than the cubic lattice, right? So this term has full rotational symmetry in this d-dimensional space, because what this is, because this involves a scalar product, right? What this is a scalar product of gradient phi dot gradient phi, and then scalar products, of course, scalar product has a full rotational symmetry, right? It's invariant under rotation, arbitrary rotations of the coordinates, okay? So this has much higher symmetry than the symmetry of the cubic lattice in d dimensions on which my Ising model Hamiltonian was defined. Okay, so why is that? You know, so it seems like, you know, if I was worrying about preserving the symmetry of the Ising model, right, I should have added here terms with higher derivatives, okay, which would restore the symmetry of the cubic lattice, or lower the symmetry of this from the full rotational symmetry to the symmetry of my original cubic lattice. So what would be such terms? So for example, I could add a term like this. So plus some coefficient, let me call it A, right? And then I could have terms like, so let's say second derivative of phi with respect to x squared plus second derivative of phi with respect to y squared, and so on, for all of the for all of the coordinates in this d-dimensional space. Okay, so this no longer has the full rotational symmetry, right? This only has the symmetry of the cubic lattice. So the reason that I have neglected those terms is that they involve higher derivatives, and they are irrelevant, as we will see, okay, under this renormalization group transformation. Okay, so as I mentioned last time, so what we will find is that the terms whose dimensions in units of momentum are negative will be irrelevant. Okay, and so let's just quickly check that the dimension of this constant A is indeed negative, right? So I have dimension of A, right, minus D, then plus 4, right, from the two dimensions of the derivative squared, and then plus two dimensions of phi, and dimension of phi was d minus 2 over 2, so this is plus d minus 2. So this has to be equal to 0, and therefore we see that the dimension of A is indeed negative. It's equal to minus 2, okay? So what we will see is that what happens to such quantities under the normalization group transformation is that they get suppressed, okay? The quantities whose dimension is negative get suppressed under RG, and therefore, so this is really the justification for ignoring these kind of terms. And so what this means is that, in fact, you know, the symmetry of the theory, that of this Landau-Ginzburg theory of the transition, can actually have higher symmetry than the microscopic model. Okay, so not all the symmetries are important. Okay, that's kind of the lesson here.
The symmetries are what determine the universality.
Right, but not all of the symmetries are important, right? So it's the symmetry of the so this symmetry is important, okay? But the symmetry of the lattice, kind of the microscopic structure of the lattice on which my microscopic model was defined, that turns out to be not important, okay? And so, I mean, physically, you can think of this as, you know, so if I look at long scales, then so it's kind of equivalent to taking this cubic lattice and kind of looking at that from far away, then, you know, the you don't really see this microscopic structure, and it looks like kind of a uniform medium. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so now let's go ahead with RG. Okay, so we let me erase this actually. Okay, so as we discussed last time, we so the first step of the RG transformation is to write our the fields phi as a sum of slow and fast modes, phi less plus phi greater, right? Where phi less involves Fourier components from 0 to lambda over b, ddk to pi to the d, phi of k e to I k dot x, and then phi greater involves the rest of the Fourier components, lambda over b to lambda d dk to pi to the d phi of k e to I k dot x. And so we can rewrite our Ginzburg-Landau functional as a functional of slow and fast fields, okay? And so as we saw last time, this will have the following general form, that so the quadratic, the terms which are quadratic in phi, so for the quadratic terms, the slow and fast fields are completely decoupled from each other. So I get a zero of phi less plus a zero of phi greater, while the phi to the fourth term, so this generally couples the slow and fast fields, okay? Plus S interaction, I will write this as S interaction of phi less and phi greater, okay? And so now, so let's just proceed kind of formally without doing explicit calculation, which we will do later. So imagine that I can integrate over the fast fields. Okay, so I have my partition function, which is an integral over phi e to minus s of phi, and I can write this as integral over the slow modes, and then integral over the fast modes of e to minus s of phi less and phi greater. Okay. So imagine that I can do this part of the integral, integrate over the fast modes. So what happens after this integration, right? So after that, so I still have z on the left-hand side, right? It's still the same z. And then I have, the integral over slow modes remains. I have not done it. But the result of the integral over the fast modes, I can always write in the same way as e to minus something. And I will call this something s prime, okay? And since I've integrated over the fast modes, this s prime is only going to depend on the slow modes, right? Since I've integrated over the fast modes. Okay, so what is this in more detail, right? So I have e to minus s prime of phi less, right? So let me now use this decomposition. So this will be equal to, first of all, it's going to contain this part without any change, right? Because this only depends on the slow modes. So e to minus has 0 of phi less, right? And then I will have integral d phi greater, so integral over the fast modes, of e to minus has 0 of phi greater times e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater, right? And this now, let me write in the following way. So let me multiply and divide this by this thing. Okay, so this is going to be equal to e to minus s0 of phi less times integral d phi greater e to minus s0 of phi greater, and then integral d phi greater e to minus s0 of phi greater e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater, and divided by the same thing, d phi greater e to minus s0 of phi greater, right? So now what this looks like, right, is a statistical mechanical expectation value of e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater, right, with respect to this s0 of phi greater as a Hamiltonian, right, or as a e to minus s0 of phi greater is a corresponding statistical weight. So let me call this thing z0, okay? So z0 is going to be integral d phi greater of e to minus s0 of phi greater. So then I have e, I should write it here, e to minus s prime of phi less is equal to e to minus s0 of phi less right? And then I have z zero integral d phi greater e to minus s zero of phi greater e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater divided by z zero. Okay. And I can, so I can write this in the following way, as e to minus s zero of phi greater, or sorry, of phi less, then times z zero. And so this thing I will write as average of e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater, average with a subscript 0. So that means that I'm averaging with respect to the fast modes only, right? And I'm using this S0 of phi greater as the statistical weight with respect to which I'm averaging, right?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Holds there, like when we write the partition function as d phi to the power minus s phi equals, now d phi is, I mean, will be, if you take phi as phi less plus phi greater, then d phi should mathematically be d phi less plus d phi greater?
Well, right, so the question is what does this d phi mean, right? So I could, you remember that, so originally when we just the Hubbard-Sardonovich transformation on the Ising model, the way we've defined d phi was just a product of d phi i's, right?
Yeah.
So it's just a multidimensional integral. So here I've passed to the continuum limit, right? So this has become a functional integral. But the best way to think about that is, so I can, if I impose periodic boundary conditions, right, and I always kind of implicitly do that, my k here is actually discrete, right? But so I can always pass back and forth between the sum over k and an integral over k, okay? But I can always write, instead of d dk to pi to the d, actually 1 over v sum over k, right? So I can always think of k as discrete. And then, so the best way to think about this integration measure is actually in Fourier space then. So this will be just a multidimensional integral, and this will be the product of d phi at different k's, at different values of k, right? And then, so then this looks like a separate, separate kind of integration over fast modes and then over slow modes. Right? Since d phi involves just products over all different k's, product of d phi's over all different values of k, right?
Isn't there any formal way of seeing that with, like, the Jacobian of changing the measure from using phi to phi less plus phi greater? I mean, I think that would be the same result formally if you put like a Jacobian.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, in principle, so these Jacobians may be non-trivial.
Yes.
Okay, so you should not take it for granted that the Jacobian is just equal to one. I mean, here it is, but there are instances. You know, I promised you to point out connections to field theory. So, you know, this actually looks like the relativistic field theory for a bosonic particle of mass r, right, where one of the space dimensions is identified with time, okay? But so one thing that doesn't happen here but does happen in relativistic field theories is that so this kind of change of variables in the change of variables in the integral can actually play an important role. So there are there is a phenomenon that's called chiral anomaly that will probably be mentioned in your relativistic field theory course that arises precisely out of this change of the integration measure, and it adds a non-trivial thing to the action. Okay, but here none of this matters. Okay.
Sorry?
Well, you know, so here this would be my original integral was written in terms of phi i's, right? The fields phi defined on the lattice. Now I want to pass to integrating over Fourier components of phi. Okay, so the measure in principle would change, but the Jacobian in this case is one. I mean, it's not obvious, it should be checked, but if you do, then you will find that it's one. okay, so, right. So now I can say that, so now I can write what my S prime of phi less, so what my new Landau functional for the slow fields, what this is, right? So S prime of phi less, right? So I just take the log, right, of both sides of this equation here. So I get this is equal to S0 of phi less. And then I have minus log of the average of E to minus S interaction of phi less and phi greater with respect to the fast modes, okay? And then, so minus log of Z0 but so this thing is just a constant, right? In the sense that it does not depend on the slow modes at all. So I'm going to ignore that, okay? Okay, so this is my now new Landau functional that depends only on the slow modes. So I've integrated out fast modes. Now this is a new Landau functional for the slow modes. So new Ginzburg-Landau functional for slow modes. And so later we will explicitly calculate this thing. Okay. Now the point is that due to symmetries, okay, the form of this new functional is going to be exactly the same as the original one. Okay? So what does it mean? It means that so due to symmetries, S prime of phi less will have the same general shape, and so let me write this in Fourier space. So it's going to be 1/2 integral now only over the slow modes, so from 0 to lambda over b, right? D dk 2 pi to the g. So, okay, so here the quadratic term looks like just r plus k squared, right? So let me write this in the following way. So, of course, the symmetry does not constrain that the coefficient of k squared still has to be equal to 1, right? And so therefore, let me write it like this. Let me write it as R0 tilde. That's my new R, right? Plus R1 tilde k squared. So it's still a constant plus k squared. But so it's a different constant here. It's not the original R. And the coefficient of k squared does not have to be 1, right, anymore. Times phi less of k mod squared, right? And then plus, I will also have a phi to the fourth term, but again, it's a different coefficient. So plus u tilde divided by 4 factorial. And then so integral from 0 to lambda over b, d dk1 to pi to the d, d dk4 to pi to the d, phi less of k1, phi less of k2, phi less of k3, phi less of k4, and then so 2 pi to the d times delta function of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, okay? And so the reason, again, so the reason it must have this form is, first of all, symmetries, right? So I cannot generate terms which are, let's say, odd powers of phi less as by symmetry. And then, so the reason that I am, I don't have, let's say, terms of which involve higher powers of phi than 4 and higher derivatives is, again, irrelevant, okay? In principle, this process will generate higher order terms, but I am ignoring them because, as we'll see later, they are irrelevant, okay? Okay, now, so let me, what I want to do now is bring it to basically exactly the same form as before, okay? So first thing I want to do is I want to change my wave vector variable so that its limits are again from zero to lambda, okay? So I'll define, okay, so this was, this new Landau functional for the slow modes is kind of the first step of the RG transformation, okay? So I've integrated out the fast modes. I got this new functional for the slow modes. Now at the second step, I want to bring this functional to exactly the same form as before, okay? So I redefine my wave vector. Variable, so I define k prime equals k times b, okay? So if k, the limits of k were from 0 to lambda, now the limits of k prime will be from, limits of k are from 0 to lambda over b, right? Because I've integrated out the fast modes. The limits of k now are again from 0 to lambda because I've multiplied by b here. Okay. Now, what I want to do is get rid of this coefficient here, so that the coefficient of k squared is again 1, like before. So I can do that by redefining phis, right? I also have the freedom of changing my phis, right? Because these are also just integration variables in my functional integral. So let me use that freedom. So I will define phi prime, which are going to be functions of the new wave vectors, k prime, in the following way as z. So this z is not the same z as the partition function. This is a small z. Okay, so it's a common notation. I don't want to change that. But just don't confuse this with a capital Z. This is small z inverse phi less of k Okay, and so we will choose basically z to be such that it allows us to get rid of this r1 tilde. Okay, so z inverse is chosen so that the coefficient of k squared is again equal to 1. Okay, so we will make this choice just a little bit later. Yeah. Well, this is just a convention that I've chosen in this Landau functional, right? Simply because, you know, so I could have chosen the coefficient of this grad squared, grad phi squared term to be some something, some a, some constant a, right? But the point is that this is a kind of an extra necessary freedom, because I can always redefine phis to make one of those constants, you know, A, R, or U, one of those constants, I can make it equal to 1. And the common choice is to make this one equal to 1.
That's just a convenient redefinition. That's nothing to do with symmetry.
No, it's just for convenience. And now, the reason I want to do it now is because I want to bring it to exactly the same form again, with the same number of constants that define this function. Yeah?
So if I understand, we're kind of aiming here for an iterative approach, right? We're going to get like the same result as before, and then we can.
Right, yeah, and then we will.
Like there's like the most crucial part, I think, for this transition is this assumption that we can, again, write the S prime of phi smaller in the same form.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying before. So the reason that it has the same form is, first of all, symmetries, right? So the fact that it must contain only even powers of phi, and also even powers of the spatial derivative, so that follows from symmetries. But then the fact that I can ignore also the terms which are higher order in phi than 4 and higher derivatives, that's irrelevant. So it will be justified kind of a posteriori. We will find later that those terms are irrelevant. It's not obvious now, but I have already mentioned that they are.
All right. Okay. Would you also need the fact that when we integrate out the fast modes, then we can observe the change in the action by redefining the constants?
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same. It's the same thing, right? Okay, so this z also has a name. It's called wave function renormalization, and that, you know, that name, I guess, comes from quantum field theory, where this phi is a relativistic quantum field, so its renormalization is called a wave function renormalization. Okay, so let's continue this now. Okay, so now let me rewrite this S prime of phi less in terms of this redefined momenta, redefined wave vectors, and redefined phis. Okay? So I get S prime of phi prime now. So this is equal to 1/2. So integral now from 0 to lambda d dk prime 2 pi to the d. Okay. So when I go from d dk to d dk prime, I get a factor of b to minus d, right? So b to minus d from the change of the integration measure, right? So So, okay, so nothing happens to r 0 tilde. Then I get plus r, actually, sorry, I call this r1. In my notes, it's actually called r2, and it's this 2. It's the counting of the powers of momentum. So let's just change it to the same thing as my is in my notes. So r2 tilde. Then I will get, okay, k prime squared, and I will get a factor of b to minus 2, right, from going, from changing, you know, from k squared to k prime squared. Okay, so then I want to go from phi less to phi prime, and that gives me a factor of z squared. So z squared times phi prime of k prime modulus squared, right? Okay, so we are done with the quadratic terms. Now the quartic one. So I get u tilde 4 factorial integral, again from 0 to lambda, d dk1 prime 2 pi to the d d dk4 prime 2 pi to the d. So I will get a factor of b to minus 4d, right, from the 4 wave vector integration measures. Sorry? No, so it's just phi prime. This is how I call it, right? So I call the new phi, so I call them phi prime. Now, you know, so after I've made this rescaling of k, right, I've kind of forgotten that it's less. Now it's the new Landau functional where the limits are again go up to lambda. Okay, so then I have a factor of z to the fourth from four powers of phi. So phi prime of k1 prime. Phi prime of k4 prime, right? 2 pi to the d delta of k1 prime plus k2 prime plus k3 prime plus k4 prime. And then I will have a factor of b to the d, right, from the change of the argument in the delta function. Right. Okay, so now, so if you just look at that, so let's see how we have to choose z so that the coefficient is equal to 1 again, right? So what I want is r2 tilde times b to minus d minus 2, right? Times z squared, so I want this to be equal to 1. So therefore, if I choose z to be equal to b to d plus 2 over 2, right? And then times r2 tilde to minus 1 half, then so this will accomplish what I want. So usually this is written in the following way. So I can always write this as b to minus eta, right? Just choose this power eta in such a way that this is equal to this, right? So then, b to minus eta over 2. And then write this thing as b d plus 2 minus eta over 2, where eta, if you remember, is this anomalous dimension critical exponent that I mentioned when we discussed the correlation function. Okay, so we will see that it enters into correlation function in that particular way, but for now it's just this thing that we need to eliminate R2 tilde. Okay, so eta is the is what's called the anomalous dimension. Okay. Okay, so when all of this is done, right, what we get now is a new Landau functional. Let me now get rid of primes everywhere, right? So I get a new Landau functional, S of phi, which has exactly the same form as before, but with different constants r and u. Okay. So I have S of phi equals integral d dx. Okay. But so we have to remember that these are rescaled coordinates, right? Since I've rescaled wave vectors, my k prime is the original k times b. This means that my new coordinates are the original coordinates divided by b. Okay. So, you know, this is a nice way to think about why this is called coarse graining transformation, right? So in my original units, if the distance was something in my original units, the distance now in the new units is less. It's divided by b. Okay, so I'm going to larger and larger length scales by eliminating modes with small wavelength. Okay. Okay, so it's 1/2 grad phi squared plus now r prime over 2 phi squared plus u prime over 4 factorial phi to the fourth, right? And so this completes this completes one step of the RG transformation. Okay. So basically, again, let's kind of remind ourselves all the basic steps. So there are three basic steps or three basic sub-steps that make one step of the RG transformation. Three basic sub-steps of the renormalization group transformation. Okay, so the first step is to divide all Fourier components into slow and fast. So divide into slow and fast modes. Then the second step is integrate. So get rid of the fast modes, integrate over the fast modes. And the third step is rescale. Rescale length or rescale wave vectors, the same thing. Rescale length and the fields phi to bring the new Landau functional to exactly the same form as before. So rescale everything to bring the new Landau-Ginzburg functional to the same form as before, okay? And so so I can think then of this RG transformation as kind of mapping in the following sense, that so I can define so given a particular symmetry, right, the particular Ginzburg-Landau functional is defined by the constants R and U, right? So I can think of particular Landau-Ginzburg functional is defined by this pair of constants R and U, right? And so renormalization group transformation is a map from this particular pair to another pair, right? Ru to R prime and U prime, which still describes exactly the same system, right? It's a different description involving longer length scales for exactly the same system, okay? Because all we have done again is we integrated out large Fourier components and rescaled our length to bring it back to the same form. Okay? Now, as we'll see, what we are interested in are fixed points of this transformation. Okay, so if we now repeat this transformation over and over again, eventually we are going to reach a fixed point where so it's some R star U star maps back to itself. Okay, it doesn't change. So why is it that we are interested in fixed points? What is the significance of the fixed point? Okay. So that's relatively easy to understand. So let's assume that we start from a particular R and U, right? So then I will have a correlation length for my system that's a function of R and U, right? So what happens to the correlation lengths under one step of this of the RG transformation? So what happens is that first of all, R and U change to R prime and U prime, right? And then this length gets divided by B, right? Due to this rescaling. So I get psi of R prime and U prime divided by B. But since you know, both of these Landau functionals describe the same system, I have to have this equality that psi of R and U, right, has to be equal to psi of R prime and U prime divided by B. Because both, again, because both Landau functionals describe the same system, just in here, it's a system with three scaled units of length. Okay? Now, so let me, let's now write this relation down exactly at the fixed point. So at the fixed point, I must have psi of R star and U star is equal to the same thing, psi of R star and U star divided by B, okay? Now, so the only way this can be true, right, is in two cases. Either psi has to be infinite or psi has to be zero, okay? So this can only be true if psi of at the fixed point of R star and U star is either infinite or zero, okay? So infinite, the case when psi is infinite corresponds precisely to the critical point, right? So we discussed, we saw before in mean field theory that correlation length diverges at the critical point, okay? And that is true always. And so this particular fixed point where psi is infinite corresponds to the critical point. So this is the critical point, while it's zero.
So it can never happen that in the on the fixed points the b would be one.
No, so b. So we choose b, right?
Yeah.
B is our step of the transformation. So. B by choice, B is something that's always greater than 1. Let's say I choose B to be always 1.1. And this is going to be my RG step. So B is not a variable.
That's like our rescaling of the case, right?
Yeah.
But
this is what, I mean, B is just what defines, B defines what I mean by fast modes, right? Fast modes are, by definition, something that has wave vectors between lambda over b and lambda, so slightly less than lambda up to lambda.
And if we have the critical point, then by the whole procedure, the whole one iteration, nothing happens, right?
Right.
So we don't have to rescale anything. We just
Well, so we rescale, but then the result is the same.
The R and U doesn't change.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just it's a consequence of the fact that there is no intrinsic. So at the critical point, there is no intrinsic length scale. The correlation length has diverged, and therefore the system looks scale invariant. So you can rescale, but it looks the same. Yeah.
What you're saying is we don't choose a new B at each step.
No, B is chosen beforehand, right? So what we want to do is choose B. So we can do we should do this as we will see. We will do this in kind of small steps. So B is just slightly larger than 1, okay? And so we do this in small steps over and over. Okay, and the system kind of what happens then is that the system kind of traces out a smooth trajectory in the RU space, and it flows to a fixed point under repeated transformation like this. Okay. Okay. So it's either zero or infinite. Infinite again corresponds to a critical point. Zero is what happens to phases on both sides of the transition under RG, right? So if correlation length is anything finite under repeated transformations like this, so we're going to keep dividing it by B, and eventually it's going to become zero, okay? So this case corresponds to just phases on both sides of the transition. Okay? So we will primarily be interested in this case. Okay? And so what we will see is that we will be able to find the values of the critical exponents from how basically R and U behave near the fixed points. Okay? Okay, so now let's actually now let's go back and actually do this transformation explicitly. So integrate out phi, integrate out the fast fields explicitly, and derive So derive recursion relations for R and U. So see explicitly how R and U change under this transformation. Okay. So so far we have only done this kind of in general. But so now let's derive explicit relations for between R and U and R prime and U prime. Okay, so let me lower this. Okay, so I want to start again from this Landau functional, right? And so let's so I have derived already this new Landau functional, just the general form of it. That it must have of the slow modes, right? So it has to be a zero of phi less, and then minus the average of log of e to minus s interaction of phi less and phi greater. And this average is taken with respect to the fast modes, right? Okay, so here, to simplify this, I'm going to use something that you must have seen already in your tutorials, which is cumulant expansion. Okay. So cumulant expansion, let me just remind you briefly what this is. Okay. So the result that I want to use is the following. So imagine that omega is some random variable, whatever it is, that I base some distribution, okay? Random variable. Then, so the following is true, that the expectation value of e to the power omega can be written always as an exponential of what's called cumulant expansion. Okay, so this is equal to e to, so first cumulant is just the average of omega itself, plus, so the second cumulant is a mean square fluctuation, so average of omega squared minus average of omega squared, and so on, all the higher order cumulants. We will, in fact, need only the second cumulant. Okay. So in our case, my random variable is going to be S interaction of phi less and phi greater, and the distribution. So just let me finish. Distribution with respect to which I am averaging is 1 over z zero. E to minus S0 of phi greater, right? Yeah.
I think you want the log to be outside.
Sorry?
I think you want the log to be outside the expectation. Oh,
yeah.
Mm. Currently, you've got like the expectation value of log of E to the minus S. S I think you want the log. I mean, that's what you put on the up there on the right.
so let me just make sure. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you. Right. Okay. So if I apply now this cumulant expansion theorem to this thing, then I get that S prime of phi less is going to be equal to as zero or phi less, right? So plus average of S interaction of phi less and phi greater. So this is the first cumulant, and then plus 1/2 average of S interaction squared of phi less and phi greater, and minus 1/2 average of S interaction of phi less and phi greater squared. Okay, and so in principle there are higher order cumulants, but as we will see, we can restrict ourselves under certain conditions to only second order cumulants. Okay, and so this is where precisely, as I already mentioned, this expansion, as we will see, will actually be expansion and a deviation of space dimensionality from 4. Okay. So then the small parameter here that allows me to cut off this expansion at only second order is precisely the deviation of dimensionality from 4. Okay, so let's first look at this one. So we don't have to do anything with this term as zero phi less. All we'll have to do is just rescale phi less, right? And momenta. So let's just leave this for now as it is. Let's now deal with this one, okay? And then, well, this is obviously more complicated, but let's first deal with the simpler term. Okay, so let me write it out explicitly. So let's write this out explicitly in Fourier space again. So I have S interaction of phi less and phi greater. So this is equal to U divided by 4 factorial. Okay. And let me introduce a shorthand notation for my integrals. So instead of writing, you know, integral ddk1, ddk4, I'm going to write this as integral k1, k4. So this will be equivalent to integral ddk1 to pi over d ddk4 to pi over d. Okay, just to save space. Okay, so it's integral from, let's say, up to lambda. That's the important thing, k1, k4. So I have phi less of k1 plus phi greater of k1. So I will use this notation, which I introduced in the previous lecture, right? I write each phi of k as a sum of a slow and a fast part, right? Times phi less of k2 plus phi greater of k2 times phi less of k3 plus phi greater of k3 times phi less of k4 plus phi greater of k4 times the delta function, so 2 pi to the g delta of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4, okay? And so now I want to identify all the different terms here. If I open those brackets, all the different combinations of the less and greater, right, that enter into here. Okay, so let's just start this. So this is equal to u divided by 4 factorial k1, k4 to lambda. So as we will see, you know, that this may seem like a horrible mess, right? If I open all those brackets, I will get, you know, 2 to the 4th different terms. But in fact, as we will see in just a few minutes, there is only one particular term from here that we need to worry about. Okay. Okay. So 2 pi to the d. Let me put the delta function in front. K1 plus K2 plus K3 plus K4. Okay. Okay. So if we just think about this for a moment. We'll find that there are, in fact, only five different kinds of terms that are present here. Okay, so the first kind will involve all the slow fields, right? And obviously, there is only one such term where I just take the product of phi less in all the four brackets, right? So this is one term, phi less of k1. Phi less of k2, phi less of k3, phi less of k4, and let me call this term A, just to refer to it quickly. Okay. Okay. Similarly, I have only one term which involves all the fast fields, right? So plus phi greater of k1. Phi greater of k2, phi greater of k3, phi greater of k4. So let me call this B. Okay. So then what else can I have? I can have a term with, let's say, three slow fields and one fast field, right? So the question is, how many such terms will be there? Four, right? And so four comes from, so this is the number of ways I can choose one out of four, right? I have to choose out of those four brackets, I have to choose one fast field and then multiply it by all the possible combinations of three slow fields. So there will be four such terms. And I can always bring it by just renaming k's, right, to the following form. So it's plus four phi less of k1, phi less of k2, phi less of k3, phi greater of k4. Okay, so I can always bring it to this form by, you know, renaming whatever the momentum of the fast field to be four, right? Since, as you can see from this expression, you know, this is completely symmetric with respect to all the k's. I can permute k's any way I want. Okay. Okay. So let me call this term C. Okay. Then I will have a term with, let's say, two slow fields and two fast fields, right? And the number of such terms is going to be 6. So this is a number of ways I can choose 2 out of 4, right? So plus 6, phi less of k1, phi less of k2, phi greater of k3, phi greater of k4. So let's call this d. And finally, the last term is where I have 1 slow field and 3 fast fields. And again, there are 4 of those. Right? Plus 4, phi less of k1, phi greater of k2, phi greater of k3, phi greater of k4, and let's call this E, okay? Okay, so let's see which ones we actually need to worry about. Well, so this one, this depends on all the slow fields, right? So we need to leave this, right? But there is nothing to average here. So this only depends on the slow fields. So this will go into the S prime of phi less as is, right? This only depends on the slow fields. This only depends on the fast fields. So after I integrate over the fast fields, this is just will be some constant. It does not depend on the slow fields, so I can just throw it away. This I don't care about, okay? Now, what about this one? So this one depends on 1 power of the fast field, right? But my Boltzmann weight, with respect to which I am averaging, right? So e to minus s zero of phi greater, this is an even function of phi greater, while this is an odd function of phi greater. So therefore, after I integrate over phi greater, this is going to give me 0. Okay, so the average of this with respect to the fast fields is 0. So same is true for this. So this is also an odd function. It involves phi greater to the third. So this is going to give me 0 again. So the only non-trivial term here is this one, which involves 2 slow fields and 2 fast fields. Okay. Okay, so let's now look at D, at the term D, separately. Okay, and so now let me take the average now. So the average of D with respect to the fast modes. So it's going to be U divided by 4 factorial times 6, right? Integral K1, K4 up to lambda. 2 pi to the d delta function of k1 plus k2 plus k3 plus k4. Okay, and then I have average. Okay, so I have phi less, I guess, of k1, phi less of k2, and then an average of the product of phi greater of k3 phi greater of k3, phi greater of k4, average with respect to the fast modes, right? Okay, so let's calculate this average now. Okay. So what is this equal to? So I have phi greater of k3, phi greater of k4, average. So explicitly, this is 1 over z0, right? Integral d phi greater, phi greater of k3, phi greater of k4. And then, so e to minus s0 of phi greater, right? And so what is e to minus s0 of phi greater? So let me write this as 0 of phi greater in Fourier space, okay? And let me pass back from integration over k to sum over k, just for convenience here. So this is equal to minus 1 over 2v, right? Sum over k. So I have r plus k squared, and then phi greater of k squared, right? So again, I've just replaced integral d dk to pi to the d by 1 over v sum over k, right? So 1 over v sum over k is the same thing as integral d dk to pi to the d, okay? Now, so this looks like just a Gaussian integral, right? You know, basically x1 times x2 times e to minus ax squared. Yeah.
I know you were mentioning it earlier, this class when Sonali asked, but can you just repeat again what's going on with the sum over k and the integral over k?
Well, so this just, you know, so it's convenient to pass often between kind of discrete k and continuous k, okay? And so the way I do this is that I assume that my system is finite, has volume V, and I apply periodic boundary conditions, okay? So what periodic boundary conditions do is that they force the components of k, say k sub I, to be discrete in this way. So k sub I has to be 2 pi divided by linear size of the system times some integer. So what this implies is that I have a volume in wave vector space per one value of k, which is equal to 2 pi divided by L to the d, which is 2 pi to the d divided by the volume, right? This is volume per one value of k in the wave vector space. Okay?
In both of those pictures, you're still considering a continuum of lattice sets set?
No, so I don't have to refer to the lattice sites here. This is just, so, you know, what reminds me of the fact that I had a lattice before is this upper limit on the wave vector integral. The fact that I have an upper limit, which is of the order of 1 divided by the lattice spacing. So this here, this just follows from periodic boundary conditions, from the fact that I have a finite system. And so then to pass between what this means is that sum over k, right, I can always write as integral d dk, and I have to divide by the volume per one value of k. Okay. Okay, so now this looks, again, just like a Gaussian integral of the form. So this looks like an integral of the form. So integral, let's say, from minus infinity to infinity dx1, dx2, e x1 times x2, e to minus a, x1 squared plus x2 squared, okay? Well, with the slight complication that phis are actually complex, phi of k are complex, okay? So this integral is equal to, you can just check this, this integral is equal to inverse of the coefficient of phi greater of k modulus squared, okay? So, but, so it's only non-zero when phi greater of k, when those k's are the same, right? So it's only non-zero here when x1 and x2 are the same, right? So therefore, this integral is equal to, so you know, this is something that just to kind of make yourself comfortable, something that you might do at tutorials, okay? So let me write this in the following way. So you remember that due to the fact that phi of x is real, I must have phi star of k is equal to phi of minus k, right? So let me change this then to phi greater star of minus k. So this is the same thing. And so then this integral is only non-zero when k3 is equal to k4. So that what I have here is just modulus of phi greater of k3 squared. Okay? Otherwise, if k3 is not equal to k4, this integral vanishes. Just because I have, again, an integral of an odd function of phi greater in this case, integrated with an even function. Okay, so this is equal to then, so V divided by K3 squared plus R, okay? And then I have to have delta of K3 and K4. Sorry, delta of K3 and minus K4, of course. Okay. And now, so let me write this in the following way as V times G0 of K3 times delta of K3 and minus k4, where g0 of k is equal to 1 divided by r plus k squared. And so I will call this fast mode propagator. So again, the propagator part comes from quantum field theory, right? So in quantum field theory, this would be the propagator of the Green's function of the particle which is described by the field phi, okay? So here again, I can also call this propagator of the Green's function of the fast modes, okay? But so again, so formally it arises just from this Gaussian integral, which is equal to inverse of the coefficient of phi, phi squared in here, okay? And you can ask also where did this factor of 1/2 disappear. So it disappeared because precisely because of this property, because phi star of k is equal to phi of minus k, right? So this means that when I sum over k here, there are actually two terms which are the same, right? Okay, so if you don't feel comfortable with this, please just, you know, just do this explicitly in your by yourselves or together in your tutorials. Okay, so just go over, you know, Gaussian integrals again for complex with complex variables. Well, you've probably done this already, right?
I don't have
Okay.
Where's the one over Z null con?
Sorry?
Where's the one over Z null con? Does that just disappear? It's like
that's
a
one over
R. Right. So it's one over Z times this integral that's equal to
right.
That's equal to one over A, right? Okay, so let's now go back to D, right? So then we can just replace this by the propagator of the fast modes, right? So what I have now is the following. So let me erase this. Okay, so I have that average of the term D with respect to the fast modes is equal to U divided by 4, right? So this is 24 divided by 6 integral K1, K4 up to lambda 2 pi to the D delta of K1 plus K2 plus K3 plus K4. And then I have phi less of K1, phi less of K2. And now, so let me pass back to continuous momentum here. So I have to replace V times the Kronecker delta by 2 pi to the D times the delta function. So I get 2 pi to the D delta function of K3 plus K4 plus K4. And then the propagator G0 of K3. Okay. And now you see that the integration over K1 and K2 and the integration over K3 and K4 here are completely decoupled, right? Here I'm forced to have K3 plus K4 equals 0, right? But then this delta function forces K1 plus K2 to be 0, right? So then I simply have two independent integrations over, let's say, K and K prime. So this is equal to, let me just write down last line and then we'll finish, U divided by 4 integral, let me actually write this as K and Q up to lambda, phi less of K, phi less of minus K, right? And then G 0 of Q, okay? So Okay, so what remains to do is just to evaluate this integral over Q of the fast mode propagator. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. Yeah.
In the first line on the last blackboard, V disappears in the delta.
Sorry, say it again.
The V, the volume.
Right. So this is just a byproduct of this moving between sum and.
Yeah, okay.
An integral, right? So the corresponding rule for the delta functions is that V times the Kronecker delta is 2 pi to the D times the delta function.
Okay.